Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, my name is Blythe Alberg, and I would like to welcome you to the Cut the Fat podcast. Visit us at www.cutthefatpodcast.com. If you're new to us, we suggest that you listen to the first 3 to 5 podcasts for the basic toolbox on fat loss.
All right, welcome back to the 7th official podcast.
I can't believe it's already been 7.
No, 7 podcasts already.
Yeah.
And today's topic is a really exciting topic, I thought.
This is a great one that you came up with, actually. I'm glad that you came across this.
We're going to talk today about what's called the National Weight Loss Registry. Now, this was a study that was started back in 1994 by Dr. Jim Hill and Dr. Rena Wing. In this study, what they did was they took over 4,000 people who had successfully lost weight on their own. And specifically, in the study, they looked for people who lost at least 30 pounds and kept it off for at least a year. And basically set out to find out how they did it. What were the things that ultimately led to their success in weight loss? Now, not just taking it off, but keeping it off as well.
For a long amount of time. I mean, a year is a significant... You can reach a new set point like you and I talked about.
I am a big believer of the idea that success leaves clues. If we want to find out how somebody got successful in basically anything in life, what we got to do is we got to find that person who's been successful and then do what they do in order to get the same results, right?
I agree. You know, when someone's shopping for a personal trainer, I do try to advise them to find somebody who actually lives the life. This is kind of the same idea. You know, find somebody who actually does that and then ask questions about how they got there.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And they can give you some really good clues as to how to achieve the same kind of success. Now, with weight loss, you and I will both admit that losing weight is probably one of the hardest things in the world to do. And research suggests that only about 20% of the population has had any success in losing at least 10% of their weight and being able to keep it off for at least a year.
Okay, so that's a small number.
It's a very small number, right? Mm-hmm. But when you think about it, and you think of all the people who you've met who've successfully lost some weight but then put it back on,
it
really is astounding as to how difficult it is.
For sure. And being only 20% of the population kind of gives you an idea of why there are still so many overweight people out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's not an easy task.
No. And so what these researchers decided to do was to go out and find the people, that 20% who had succeeded, and then put them into a study to figure out what it is that they did to be successful.
I think that's a phenomenal idea. Share the secrets.
Absolutely. And that's what we're going to do today. We're going to share with you basically 6 main strategies that have been utilized by the people who successfully lost the weight and kept it off. Now, I had mentioned that in order to be involved in the study, you had to lose at least 30 pounds and keep it off for a year. But when we look at the population in the study, it actually is much more powerful than that, because the average person in the study lost 73 pounds and kept it off for at least 5.7 years.
Mm.
You know, the minimum required to get into the study was just 30 pounds for at least a year.
Yeah.
But the average person lost 73 pounds and kept it off for at least 5.7 years.
On their own, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is, 5 years. They've achieved a new lifestyle.
Absolutely. And a new set point, as we talked about in the previous podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So let me give you a few other points about the population that was involved in the study. About half of the people who were involved were overweight as children.
Okay.
And 75% of those people had at least one overweight parent.
Mm.
So this is basically speaking to genetics.
Mm-hmm.
These are people who did not have wonderful genetics. And I think a lot of our listeners out there probably come from that group that find it fairly easy to put weight on.
Sure. Sure. There are more of us out there than not.
Yes, that's for sure. 77% were women, and the average age was 46.8 years. Why is that important?
That's important because probably by that age, all the women have had their children.
Mm-hmm.
You're sort of middle-aged, and your body starts digressing after, like, age 30, I would say. You kind of start – your metabolism slows down,
yeah,
and everything starts reversing.
I mean, I hate to admit it, but aging does seem to have that effect. As we get older, it is more difficult to lose the weight and keep it off. It's just a truth.
It is a truth, but I can tell you one more little truth that might be a little motivator, mm-hmm, for some people, is that it's never too late to start increasing your metabolism, and it can be done no matter what age.
Right. I said it's a little bit more difficult, so it means that you've got to work harder, mm-hmm, to achieve the same results that you may have been able to work in a much lighter fashion when you were younger.
That's right.
But you can still achieve the same results. I think that's the message.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, that's why I do encourage parents to get their children involved now in eating healthy and being active. It gives them a better setup for when they're older.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe we'll dedicate a whole podcast to that as far as the whole story behind obesity in children,
yeah,
as well. I know you have how many children now?
Three
children. So I know that you also help them to live the lifestyle as well.
I do my absolute best.
Practically every person in the study reports having tried and failed to lose, mm-hmm, weight using fad diets.
It sounds like one of the general population people, right?
Absolutely. So, and I know that a lot of our listeners are in that same boat. So it really, you know, what we're formulating here is a picture of the average standard American who has difficulty losing weight. And, you know, for our international listeners, even, you know, the story is basically the same across the board.
Oh,
doesn't,
yeah,
really matter if it's just America.
That's right.
About half achieve their weight loss without any formal program such as Weight Watchers or Jenny Craig's or those types of formal program, even a doctor monitored program, mm-hmm, or something along those lines.
Well, I think that's really cool, because not that it's easy if you go on, say, a Jenny Craig diet or any type of food that you can purchase. You know, Fuel to Go is another one that I know of. There,
mm-hmm,
you know, you can purchase those, but really you can only eat them and buy them for so long. They really,
right,
aren't the yummiest tasting meals. But what's really cool, and I think successful, for the people, the half of these people that achieve the weight loss without a program like that, is that they actually learned how to prepare the food themselves, which is a key to success in the future.
I agree with that. Mm-hmm. But I think the story there, or the message in that point, is that it's possible to lose weight and keep it off on either approach. You can use these approaches like Jenny Craig and Weight Watchers, mm-hmm, or you can do it on your own. You don't need one of those programs to make it happen.
You don't need it. That's,
yes,
the point. Yep.
So, you know, I know we received a question not long ago from one of our listeners who asked, well, what about Jenny Craig and Weight Watchers, mm-hmm, and those types of programs?
Mm-hmm.
We're not against those.
Oh, no. Actually, I think they work quite well, especially for people who have a lot of weight to lose. It helps you learn about portion control. It encourages you to eat smaller, frequent meals.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually prepares well-rounded meals for you. So it's a great way to get your foot wet, you know, in a new program.
And it often also incorporates support.
Yes.
And a system for requiring you to monitor your results.
Tracking.
Yeah, mm-hmm, tracking. And it gives you somebody to be accountable to.
I agree. And I think that's why those programs are so successful.
I think that's probably a big part of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it requires you be in one of those programs unless you learn the very important lessons behind them.
Mm-hmm.
That if you don't have the group, you might want to find a friend or a family member to be accountable to in addition to yourself.
Right.
The final point about the population involved in the study was 89% of the people who were in the study used a combination of diet and exercise to achieve their weight loss. 10% used diet alone, and only 1% used exercise alone. So what do you think the messages are in that point?
I think the message behind that point is it can't be done with just exercise. You won't achieve weight loss with just exercise.
Right.
I have a personal belief of exercising makes you feel good. When you feel good, you make better choices and you choose, mm-hmm, to eat right. I know when I've got a class that I have to teach in the evening and I have to do a big workout, I know for darn sure I'm not going to go eat a big piece of cake before I do that. I won't be able to teach the class. I'll have a stomachache. So that,
right,
definitely keeps me in check and keeps me eating right. If I schedule workouts, especially with other people, because if I know I'm going to be doing it with somebody else, I can't bail out now, can I?
Very, very true.
And I think another idea behind that is, if you eat right, you actually have more energy. So it kind of works in the reverse as well. If you have more energy, you're more prone to say, you know what, I might want to go for a walk, or hey, let's go have a workout, or be more active.
Right. Now, if we look at the research pretty much suggests that the exercise alone really does not impact weight loss for the majority of the population.
Right.
And this study supports that, Because only 1%, and that's probably a fluke. We can't say that that's statistically significant.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Only 1% was able to lose weight and successfully keep it off using exercise alone. Now, let's take a look at diet alone. There are those out there who say exercise is not important for weight loss, that all you need to monitor is your diet and change your diet and you'll lose weight. But in this study, only 10% of the group used diet alone. And that tells me that's very important as well.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. Because I think that people can lose weight. It wouldn't be as much weight, but I think people can lose weight just by changing their diet to start. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that once you start incorporating exercise and you get the good habit and the routine of doing both, you're gonna get quicker results.
Mm-hmm. And I think this study supports that idea that you can lose weight by diet alone. Since 10% is a significant amount of people, but I think the big story in this single point is that 89%, almost 90% of the people in this study used a combination of both diet and exercise to achieve their weight loss. That tells me that that is the best formula.
Yep.
When we're talking about
90% of the population, 90% of the people here in the study.
Yeah. So do not listen to those people who say diet's all that's needed, and don't listen to the people who say exercise is all that that's needed, because according to this study, in people who are living their lives out in the real world. Mm-hmm. That's what makes this study so exciting, is that this is not happening in some laboratory somewhere, in some sterile environment.
Right.
You know, when we're designing scientific studies, we want to design a sterile environment so we can look at just one factor to determine if that factor has an impact on a disease or a situation or a health challenge. In this situation, in this study, this is real life people out there who figured it out on their own.
I think that's awesome.
That's what makes this so powerful. So that's great. So why don't we just jump into the six main strategies that the researchers discovered were behind the majority of the results that people got in this study, okay? So we're going to go through, and we're going to go through each point, and then we're going to basically just discuss it.
Okay.
Okay? So the first one is they exercise often. According to the registry, the participants do an average of 60 minutes of activity every day. The most common activity, now it doesn't have to be, according to this at least, it doesn't have to be intense activity. 77% of the participants in the study simply walked for 60 minutes a day. That amounted to 400 calories a day, which amounts to about how many calories per week?
Oh, 2,800.
Yep. Well, in this situation, the average woman burned 2,500 calories. The average man burned about 3,200 calories per week, which
That's
amounted
a lot of calories.
It is. It amounted to about 20 to 30 miles per week.
Wow.
Now, it also should be noted that 1 in 5 people in the registry did resistance training.
Okay.
So let's take a look at that. First of all, you know, you and I are both huge fans of weight training. We always talk about how weight training and resistance training is the should make up the core of somebody's program.
Right.
But in this study, it doesn't seem to be a necessary factor. Now, before I let you comment, I want to basically say that this is one study that's looking at a group of people and trying to figure out what it is that makes them successful.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that these are the only 6 points that result in weight loss.
Right.
And so I don't want to just assume that because they walked for 60 minutes, that's the only way to successfully lose weight. But it does give us some good information to live by. So let's break it down. What do you think about the whole 60-minute program?
Well, I can tell you that I would like to take a few guinea pigs, imply this plan, and try to speed it up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that weight loss results would happen faster for these people, the 77% who were walking, if they maybe cut their walking to 30 minutes a day and did 30 minutes of resistance training, they may have lost more weight and been able to keep it off doing the same amount of activity or same time of activity every day, 60 minutes every day. However, I think that if these people were inactive, and don't forget that, you know, these people were doing this on their own, that may be the only thing they're comfortable doing.
Or were capable of when they started the program.
That's right. Yep. We don't know how much weight these people had to lose. So walking, just becoming active, like we've said so many times, makes a huge difference.
I think the biggest nugget that can be pulled from that one point is that what seems to be important is the consistency of the activity rather than the intensity, at least when we're talking about starting a weight loss program and losing that first whether it be, you know, 20, 30, 40, mm-hmm. 50, 60, or 70 pounds, depending upon how much weight you have to lose. Mm-hmm. I think my problem with this is that it appears that once they got on a specific program, they never really changed it. You know, they just stuck
right.
with the same program.
Right. And that is like a red flag in the back of my mind, too, that they probably could have changed up a few things. But these people were doing this on their own and it worked for them.
Yes, it worked. And so I don't want to get too much into, you know, coulda, woulda, shouldas.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Let's just basically tell people what was discovered in the study. You can use it as a foundation. You can use it as a baseline and then build upon that. I think that's our message.
Yes.
Is build upon that to try to improve things. Do your own clinical trial. Mm-hmm. Start with something like this. It is hard enough to get people to do 30 minutes every single day.
Oh, right. It's hard enough just to get started.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you have to put in more effort than what is considered I want to say politically correct. Mm-hmm. I think that's an appropriate term because it's not politically correct to ask somebody to do 60 minutes of exercise every day. The government has now made that recommendation, mm-hmm. but I think they do so with the belief that people aren't going to actually do it.
Okay.
But it used to be they were recommending 20 minutes a day, 3 days a week, remember?
Yeah, I remember. But that's 60 minutes a week.
Considering the fact that that's 1 hour, you have 24 hours in a day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just wasn't enough to make a result. So the government said, okay, we're actually going to say what the studies actually suggest is more effective, 60 minutes every day.
Okay.
And that's what's been found to be effective in this study. So mm-hmm. you guys who are listening, you know what? 30 minutes of that can be listening to our podcast. You can just be walking on the treadmill for that 30 minutes and then do whatever you want for the other 30 minutes.
Right. You get some cool new tunes to listen to or watch a movie. Watch, you know.
TV shows. TiVo. Yeah. We talked about that last week.
Yeah. Biggest Loser, man.
Absolutely. But do it watching TV. Don't watch The Biggest Loser sitting on the couch.
Oh, you mean do it while you're walking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do it while watching TV.
Yeah.
Watch TV
while being active, I think, mm-hmm. is a good way to do it. So now as far as resistance training, you know, according to the study, people who lost the weight, it doesn't appear that that was a core factor. But I think it can, if you were to add, even if you were to do 60 minutes of walking a day,
uh-huh.
and then maybe just do a 20-minute weight training session, just,
right.
you know, each day, just do one muscle group each day. I think you can do a lot of good as far as achieving weight loss and probably keeping it off easy.
Oh, for sure. And just one more time, I want to touch on what you mentioned. Build upon that. If you want to start with 60 minutes a day, if that's something new that you're going to be adding to your schedule, add a little something at the end. Add some sit-ups or some push-ups at the mm-hmm. end or some walking lunges. Just do one extra exercise after that. Just learn to build upon your plan.
Right. Mm-hmm. Or maybe for the last 15 minutes, do some interval training.
Yeah.
You know, something like that.
Yeah.
But I guess what we're suggesting is, number one, if all else fails, keep a consistent program,
yes.
even if it's just walking for 60 minutes.
Consistency is key. I will swear by that.
If mm-hmm. you don't feel like weight training today, don't weight train. Go walk.
Mm-hmm.
But be consistent with it on a daily basis. Okay? So that's point number one. Now, point number two is not rocket science either, right? It's eat a low-calorie diet. This is what they did. They ate a low-calorie diet, and they ate low-fat.
Okay.
I can't say that I'm a huge fan of low-fat eating, but in this study, it appears as though the people who lost weight and successfully kept it off, they did eat fairly low-calorie, and their fat was approximately 24%, made up about 24% of their diet. They also ate higher fiber. So, again, there's no rocket science here. It's pretty cut and dry. It's just eat less, exercise more so far.
Okay, except I totally disagree with that. Low-calorie diet compared to what? I mean, if you're used to eating 7,000 calories a day, okay, yes, you're going to be on a low-calorie mm-hmm. diet. But if you're somebody who doesn't eat right now and you eat 500 calories a day and you're going to go walk on a treadmill and think that you're going to lose weight, I mean, yes, you will burn more calories, but it's not going to be the kind of calories you want to burn. So,
yeah, I think what they meant by that was that it's lower than what their body needs to maintain weight.
Okay.
I'd have to look into exactly.
I like that.
Yeah.
Explanation better.
I should have expounded upon that, but they ate less than their body required to maintain or put on weight.
Okay, so they're bound to lose.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
it's probably a small caloric deficit. Mm-hmm. Let's keep that in mind as well. We're not talking about large caloric deficits, and in fact, research suggests that just keeping a smaller caloric intake, for instance, you may lose more weight decreasing your calories by 300 calories than you would by decreasing by 500 calories.
Right.
I think that's an important point to make, is that more is not necessarily better when you're trying to lose weight. And I think that's the point that you were referring
to. Yeah. There's a huge – let me just tell you a quick story if we have a quick moment. Mm-hmm. I teach a group exercise class, and there was a seminar that was held explaining nutritional calories, all sorts of stuff. Anyway, the bottom line at the very end of the seminar – I mean, you could have walked in the last 5 minutes and learned everything they talked about. The last 5 minutes stated, if you cut 3,500 calories out of your diet – every week, so 500 calories a day, you will lose a pound. That was the bottom line, which could or could not be true. But most of the people in the room said, turned to their friend and said, hey, that means if I cut 1,000 calories out of my diet today, then I'll lose 2 pounds. If I cut 7,000 calories out of my diet this week, I'll lose more weight. And that's not the truth. I mean, that's the truth until you become totally muscular deficient.
Yes.
Until you have no muscle left. You don't want to become a waif who can hardly walk around either.
Right.
You need to feed your body good nutrition, and you need to eat. So I just hate people thinking that the less you eat, the better.
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
I think Tom Venuto put it best in his book,
mm-hmm.
Burn the fat, feed the muscle.
Yes. So true. I can't tell people enough. Anyway, that's a great book for those of you who are stuck between, you know, it doesn't resonate with you maybe that eating less equals loads of weight loss.
Right. Eating less meaning a couple hundred calories, mm-hmm. 200-300 calories lower than what your body needs so that you slowly achieve your weight loss goals.
Mm-hmm.
But and I can't believe people actually still sit through seminars where all they do is say eat less and exercise more.
Yeah.
It's almost an insult to the intelligence.
Yeah. It's like a following. They had a following there, though. It's crazy.
Okay. Point number three. I know this is one that you might want to comment on. They eat breakfast. People who lose weight and keep it off, they eat breakfast. If you are not a breakfast eater, too bad. You've got to become one.
Yeah. Get into a new routine. Really. This is going to be one of the easiest things you will make yourself do. I know my 14-year-old daughter wakes up every morning, but I'm not hungry. And I said, you're going to school and you're not going to be able to eat until afternoon.
Yeah.
So you need to eat something because you will be hungry and you don't want to go that many hours. You've already been fasting for the last 8 hours while you were sleeping. You don't want to continue that on until lunchtime. It's not healthy. It slows your metabolism.
78% of the people in this study ate breakfast, and you can't ignore that. That is a huge percentage.
That's proof
of the
is
group
in the pudding.
Who
proof is in the eggs.
Exactly. But in this study, believe it or not, it wasn't eggs that they ate. This goes against some of the stuff that we believe as well, and that is that the majority of people who started their day with breakfast ate cereal and fruit for breakfast.
Okay. I think that's okay for the average mm-hmm. person. Maybe for somebody who was eating frosted mini wheats and they switched to Cheerios.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's okay. And if you're eating cereal for breakfast, you've got the rest of the day to burn all those carbohydrates.
And if you're counting your calories and keeping your caloric intake fairly low or within the range mm-hmm. for proper weight loss, you're exercising regularly, then you can probably get away with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Although I would recommend having some protein at breakfast.
Yes, I would too. And again, research that was probably not available to these people suggests that starting your day with eggs is a really great way to do it. And it helps you to eat less throughout the day.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So eat eggs or eat Blythe's protein pancakes.
Love them.
Yeah, they're on
Get
our
the
website.
Recipe on the website.
It's on our blog. Just go through. You can just type in pancakes in the search, and it'll pull up the recipe for Blythe's wonderful protein pancakes. People
and
love them.
Everybody who's tried them loves them. Yeah. It's not a yucky health food.
Yes.
Yeah, it's one of the yummy ones.
They're really fantastic. So check them out on our website, www.cutthefatpodcast.com. And you know, the point is, eat breakfast. If it's cereal, make sure that it's a higher fiber cereal.
Mm-hmm.
Add some fruit to that mix.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get away starting your day with some protein, I think you'll do even better.
I think so, too.
All right, number four. This may come as a surprise to you.
Yeah, interesting.
Well, it's not a surprise to us because we've talked about this in the past. Point number four is that they weighed themselves regularly. Mm-hmm. 77% of the participants in the study weighed themselves at least once a week. And 44%, this is what may surprise you, 44% of the participants weighed themselves daily.
Hmm.
So what's clear is that having a system for monitoring your results
mm-hmm.
is important.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I definitely. And I think that the people who probably weighed themselves daily kept in a little closer check than, you know, oh, geez, okay, I slipped off the wagon today. I ate, I don't know, 3 extra bowls of cereal or whatever it was that you decided to eat. You ate that piece of cake at the birthday party. You weigh yourself the next day. Ooh, I'm up 2 pounds. Guess what? That person's probably going to be extra sure to make sure that they are in that routine, back into their routine that day.
I think that's the big point, is the people who weighed themselves on a regular basis use that as a way to monitor the results and then change course when needed. They didn't use it as a means of getting off the diet, which I think a lot of people do.
Right.
Or of pulling the ripcord and you know, getting out of there. They used it as a means of promoting success in their program.
Yeah. It is motivating. It's motivating when you notice you've dropped a pound. It's motivating when you try on your clothes and they fit loosely. It's unmotivating when you see you've gained a pound or two or three or four. It might just help get you back on the program. So it's an okay idea to weigh yourself as long as you keep it, you know, within reason.
I agree 100%. And in this situation, you know, you can't ignore these results. 77% weighed themselves at least once a week. I think that's reasonable.
I think that's reasonable.
And if you can look at your scale with a very sophisticated eyes and not beat yourself up over gaining a pound or half a pound or even a pound and a half on a day, daily basis, well, at least from one day to the next,
right?
Then, you know, I think it's feasible for you to check your weight on a daily basis as long as you can look at it with very sophisticated eyes. Fair enough?
Yes.
Okay. Number 5?
Consistent eating habits.
Yes.
Consistency is key. This is cool.
Yes. These people had very consistent eating habits. I think one of the most important findings in this, with this point, is that the people who successfully lost weight and kept it off, they stuck to their program day in and day out, including weekends, including vacations, and including holidays. And this is big because this is now, I mean, we're doing this podcast right now during the Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving's tomorrow.
Yeah.
And these people don't give themselves a stay of dieting on these days. And I think that's an important point.
You and I talked about that with exercise as well. Consistency really is key. And if you can get yourself through the day-to-day, find things that you like to eat and find things that really work. It doesn't matter if Thanksgiving is tomorrow, you know, use the turkey for your proteins, use the sweet potatoes for your carbs, make healthy choices.
Yes. And again,
good that you
keep the quantities down. Don't allow yourself to just go, you know, unchecked through the diet, through the meal. Keep your portion sizes small. You know, in people who in this study who did give themselves a stay of dieting, if you will, a days off during vacations, for instance, and holidays, they were actually much more likely to put the weight back on. So there's something about that mentality, about that thought process that allows people to get off the program.
Yeah, I think that you hit the nail on the head when you said the thought process, because when you know there's a weekend coming up, it's kind of like, well, I know I'm going to start my diet on Monday. You know, you've got the whole mentality of, I'm just going to do whatever the heck I want, let loose, because I know come Monday, I've got to get back on my diet. So people who are really good all week, take the weekends off. That's exactly why you backpedal the whole weekend and then you start all over again.
Yeah. I think the problem is when they do that, it's so easy just to say, oh, that felt so good. I'm just going to stick with, I'm just going to give up my diet and go back to my normal programming. You don't say that consciously, but you say it subconsciously.
Yes. So, whether you want to admit it or not.
So what is the solution for people who do that? We're not saying, and actually the study isn't saying that you can't not stay on the diet during holidays and vacations and be successful.
Well, my immediate answer to that is everything in moderation. Don't go crazy. I mean, if you know you're going to a birthday party and you're going to have a piece of birthday cake, well, you know, go have a workout first, burn some calories. You decide where you're going to store the fat. Is it going to be in the muscle? I mean, where you're going to store those calories? Is it going to be in the muscle or is it going to be in the fat? So there are ways that you can trick your body into using up these extra calories you're going to be ingesting, if that's what you plan on doing. But I think the biggest idea behind this is plan your, I'm going to call it a cheat meal, but really it should still be a healthy choice. I don't know, have a meal or have a night or have a day. If you have a, Every Wednesday you meet your girlfriend for lunch. You know, go plan that day and do something extra that day to make up for it before you do it, before you go have that meal. And then
you're basically planning your return to the program.
Yes. Yes. You're planning your short intermission, and you know that you're going to get right back on. But you know there's another short intermission right around the corner.
Right.
And as long as they're planned and scheduled, people tend to stay on track.
Yeah. And in fact, in the study, I think that's what people who did take a break during vacation holidays did, is they went back on the program immediately after returning to their normal life or normal situation.
Very important. I think that takes willpower for people. And I think it takes planning as well. If you're tracking and you can look at the pie chart, or you can look at the numbers, you can look at the calories you just ate. Some people need to see it on paper.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a way of tracking, that's a great way to also motivate you.
And the people in the study, along the same lines, who were successful, they ate fast food only once a week, and they would eat 2.5 other meals per week just from other restaurants.
Okay.
So it wasn't that they didn't eat out, but they were very – the majority of their meals came from cooking or baking and preparing their own
food.
On
their own. Okay.
Yeah. So I think that's also a good take-home message. And if you want to mimic what they did in the study, then – decrease your fast food eating to once a week. Try to choose good foods when you are there. And if you go out to other restaurants, say to meet family and friends, then keep it to about two to three meals per week at the most.
And that's a lot. That's four meals out.
It's not for a bachelor, a young bachelor like myself.
Okay. Four meals. I'm thinking dinner, like out
this is
with
per week.
People.
I may eat three meals a day out. In the restaurants. I mean, I try to make good choices when I am doing that, but I think it's a good point to make that maybe that's not even allowed with people who have a tendency to eat out a lot, people who are busy with work, bachelors, etc. You need to be pretty good about preparing your own meals. I think we've talked about that in the past.
We have. I think also knowing what you should be looking for on the menu if you are ordering out. There are a lot of foods that you can get either at the grocery store prepared or something if you go to a restaurant.
Yes.
There are things that you can get, steamed chicken and rice at any Chinese restaurant. I don't care where you go. Steamed rice, steamed chicken, and steamed vegetables. That is actually a pre-contest bodybuilder's diet.
Yeah.
You can get it. It's very, very inexpensive, and it's about as clean as you can get.
Yeah, I think it's also
technically eating out, but
it is. It is. But I think it's a misconception that people think that losing weight is going to be expensive to them. Because the truth is, when you're eating good foods, it's less expensive.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So we've already talked about the sixth point a bit, I think, in this previous discussion. But the sixth point is that they appear to be on constant guard for slip-ups. They immediately get back on the horse when they do slip up.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not perfect. The people in the study were not perfect. But when they messed up, they caught themselves messing up, and they got right back on the horse. And that is a very important point, I think, for people to really think about.
That is a big message. I think taking responsibility, if you know that you've gone out 20 times this week, if you've eaten out 5 days this week, every meal, maybe that has something to do with some of the weight you've put on. Take a week or two, take responsibility for what you've done, number one, and change what you did to put that weight on.
Yes. So get back on the horse.
Yep.
It's okay to slip up every now and again, but you must get back on the horse.
That's most important.
Okay. So those are the six points. I think we covered them pretty well. There are a few more points I want to talk about before we let you guys go. And we are going a little bit long on this session, but I think it's important because I think the points in the study are very helpful for people out there listening. One point I wanted to talk about was the fact that 83% of the participants in the study reported a moment, kind of an epiphany, where weight loss no longer was a want, and it immediately became a need in their life. And this was normally triggered by some sort of circumstance, like a family member having a heart attack, or a doctor telling them that their weight was now life-threatening, or a serious medical problem related to their weight, or when they stepped on the scale and reached an all-time high.
Right.
And they just got disgusted with where they were in their life. Seeing a picture or a reflection that caused great personal pain to them.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've all done that. I'm reading all these points thinking,
wow, you know, I've probably experienced every single one of those points at some stage in my life.
Except number two.
Well, yeah, it was never a life-threatening situation.
For you,
but,
yeah.
But you know what? Being pregnant and gaining a lot of weight can be a big issue. So if you're pregnant out there and you're listening, there are certain things you can do to maintain your weight. Of course, it's going to go up because you've got a baby.
It has to go up. Let it go up, but we don't want it to be excessive.
Right. It doesn't have to be excessive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we might talk about that in a future podcast as well for some people, or at least in a blog post, because...
I have a friend who's pregnant right now who would definitely listen to that one.
Well, I have a friend who's pregnant as well, but she's kind of taking the opposite approach. She's trying everything she can not to gain weight, and she's over-exercising, and she's under-eating, and it's disturbing because, you know, the bottom line is if the body's going to bring a baby into this world, it has to know that food is abundant and that you're not under any kind of risk of danger, like being attacked by a lion or under any kind of stress. Mm-hmm. So we've got to allow the body to have the nutrients it needs to tell the body that food is abundant and it's okay to bring a child into this world. Anyway, it's a discussion for another time. okay, so some other points, and these are the final points that we'll talk about before we let you guys go for the day. The successful participants in the study had a high dietary restraint, meaning that they were very good about pushing away the donuts in the office and the cake when the parties came around.
You know, I think that's a consistency thing too.
Mm-hmm.
Once you do it, you feel great that you didn't do it. So next time it comes around, you'll remember how great that felt. And especially if there's donuts in the office every day or a cake in the office every week, you get to the point where you can say, you know what? I'm not going to have any.
Yeah.
Consistency is key.
It gets easier each time you reinforce it in your brain.
Yes.
It's an acquired skill.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it takes some remembering when you've been away from it for a while, but it will come back.
Absolutely. We talked about that point. People who were less depressed lost more weight and were able to keep it off.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of people, that's common sense to them, right? I mean, depression causes a lot of people to eat. And oftentimes if you're depressed and you're being treated with medications, it's not uncommon for those medications to cause people to put weight on as well.
Okay.
So do everything you can. You know, I know it's we don't have a lot of time to discuss that in this podcast as far as depression and reaching, you know, states of happiness with your own life to achieve more weight loss. But I think it's important to start thinking about it. If you are depressed, try to really work through that.
And I think exercise is a great one for depression, too.
Certainly does help a lot.
A release of endorphins might make you feel happy for a little while.
Hey, there was a study that compared exercise. This is just, I'll just give this one point, but it was a study that took three groups. One group was put on a medication, I believe it was Prozac.
Okay.
The other group, a second group, was put on an exercise program alone. And the third group was put on Prozac plus exercise.
Okay.
And this is for moderate depression. At the end of the study, the only group that was still, quote unquote, antidepressed or not depressed was the group who was put on the exercise-only program.
Wow.
Not even the group that was put on Prozac plus exercise was still, quote unquote, antidepressed.
That is powerful.
Yeah. And we can talk about that in a future podcast as well. The longer the weight loss was kept off, the easier it became.
Yes.
So I think that's a good point for people to know.
Consistency again.
Yes.
It keeps coming up.
And it gets easier, people. It's difficult in the beginning. It's difficult for all of us.
Mm-hmm. You know, most of us don't take responsibility for the weight gain, yet it's so difficult to lose. So take responsibility that you got yourself there, whether it was when you were 5, 6, 7, 8 years old or when you were 30, 35, 40 years old. Doesn't matter. The weight got there because of you, and it's your responsibility to take it off.
And we're talking about responsibility, not blame.
No,
responsibility,
not blame.
Not blame. And the word responsibility, if you think about it, if you break it apart, it means ability to respond.
Yes.
That's an empowering process, not blame, which is disempowering. That's where you just point the finger at yourself and say, you're such a bad person for putting on all this weight, or you're such a bad person for eating all that food and not exercise. That's blame. Get that out of your life.
Yeah, that's
Throw it away.
Too negative.
You don't
too
need
negative.
It. You have the ability to respond. That's empowering. Have a good word. A good word, Black. You know, people who did regain some of the weight in this study, they practically all stayed more than 10% below their highest ever weight. So that's good news. It means that they were able to reset their set point to at least one set point below where they were.
That's great.
In the previous podcast, we talked about at the maximum, trying to lose only 10% of your weight.
That's right.
And then keeping it off And then after you've achieved that goal, your goal is not to continue to lose weight. It's to keep that same weight for the next 6 months, 3 to 6 months. Mm-hmm. And then after that 3 to 6 month period, beginning again to reset your point, to lose another 5 or 10% of your weight and then maintain that for another 3 to 6 months.
Yep.
So if you can do that, at least with this study, it appears that the set point theory holds true.
If you can do it, you
won't go back up to that main weight, even if you fumble for a period of time.
Mm-hmm. Great. I love it.
So there you have it.
A lot of information today. Yeah. That was a fun show.
Anything else to add?
I think we're ready to wrap it up.
All right. Well, guys, thanks for tuning in. Remember, check out our website, www.cutthefatpodcast.com. Please tell all your friends. Get to iTunes. Have them sign up and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes. It helps us achieve higher levels on the search results when people search for weight loss, for instance. The higher we get, the more people will listen and the more power we'll have to bring you guys better information.
We've got all sorts of information we want to share with you guys, so keep tuning in.
Absolutely. www.cutthefatpodcast.com. We'll see you guys next time on
Cut the Fat Podcast.
Say you want to try something new. A little twist of what you know is true. You're in a cloudy hole, shit don't touch you. Feel a bliss of pop the pussy's blue. And all the sticky things that keep me silent are the same things that make your sick world violent.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.